And the faithful and the daughter of Zion are those characters we hear in the first chorus, and the faithful is the second chorus. And the dialogue between the personification of Christian faith and the faithful is part of the text, and therefore is something that Bach reflects by bouncing these dialogues back and forth between the two choruses. So, the two choruses and orchestras allow, one, spectacular spatial effects, but more importantly, it allows for dialogues back and forth. Also, different characters, different factions, like the Jews versus the priests versus the faithful, different elements of the story will have their own location within the performing space. Look, this is almost as good, in fact, in some ways, it's better than having actual stage action. In a drama, we'd expect characters to be at certain parts in the stage, and their physical relationship tells us much about their dramatic relationship. Bach is doing the same thing with his stationary performing forces by arraying them the way he does across his performance space. Each choir is given its own complete quartet of soloists, soprano, alto, tenor, and bass. Most of the speaking parts, Peter, Judas, Jesus, the evangelist, Pilate, Pilate's wife, and so forth, most of the speaking parts are in chorus one. Only two speaking parts are in chorus two, and those are the false witnesses. But chorus two also represents the faithful, the Christian faithful. Both choirs sing together when they represent the Jews, that is, the high priest, the elders, and the people. This is something that's called a turba when they're singing in chorus, and we'll get to that in due time. And they all sing together when they're singing the Lutheran chorales. Any movement, then, that expresses the community of all Christians. So when everyone sings together, it's a moment of signal importance, and we should take very careful note of it. Now, the number of performers at, say, the 1736 Leipzig performance is still very controversial. And today, there's lots of arguments one way or the other. The general but by no means universal consensus says that no less than 60 performers were involved. Now, by modern standards, that might not seem like a lot. In Bach's day, 60 performers was a tremendous, if you'll excuse me, humongous number of performers. The locals were probably augmented by former students returning to Leipzig to aid in such a special event. Now, the number of performers required and the sheer difficulty of this music necessitated a tremendous amount of rehearsal time. This was all possible because during Lent, the 40 days prior to Easter Sunday, or 38 days prior to the Good Friday performance, no public secular music performance was permitted. So there was lots of talent available with some time on their hands. If Bach was to write a ridiculously huge piece like this, it should be a passion because then he could maximize the rehearsal time given the availability of performers. All right, analytic approaches that we might take to this piece. I can't resist letting you know some of the literature that's out there before we take our path. The Matthew Passion, as I said, is a work of tremendous length, expressive range, compositional complexity, and spiritual depth. It's a work without precedent in the repertoire, a work then that demands to be approached on its own terms, a work that has inspired many different and many valid analytical approaches. For example, and this is just an example of a few, psychological analysis. Dr. Vladimir Konashny, professor of psychology at the University of California, San Diego. In his article analysis, Bach, St. Matthew Passion, a psychological analysis, arousal-raising devices, psychophysical and collative variables, he discusses Bach's use of polyphony in the St. Matthew Passion. And I just would quote a little so you have a feel for where this analysis is coming from. The absolute ease with which Bach manipulated large numbers of parts produced textures of great richness, this complexity presumably being arousal-raising. As much as variety and complexity could be kept under control by the formation of supersigns, the great masses of sound, psychophysical, which he used with as much skill as any composer, were held in check with the subtlety with which he manipulated several parts and contrasted the passages of elaborate figuration. The pleasing effect is achieved by keeping arousal under control, either by the simultaneous use of arousal-raising and arousal-moderating devices, as indicated above, or through the introduction of such contrast on the temporal dimension, where one can speak of the arousal-boost-jag mechanism, unquote. I will not attempt a translation of this passage for now. Suffice to say that Dr. Konieczny has some very interesting things to say about the St. Matthew Passion, and they are informed by his particular disciplinary point of view.